Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the church.
I'm Nathan Wright, and you're listening to the Mormon Channel of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Originally intended as a governor's mansion, the Beehive House served for years as the personal residence of Brigham Young and his family, a few ensuing church presidents, and still stands today as a museum showing visitors how the Young family lived in the mid to late 1800s. And joining me today on Legacy are our long-standing friends, Chad Orton and Emily Utt, both historians who work closely with church historic sites. Chad and Emily, welcome back to Legacy.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I must say, you're both really good sports for coming back to the radio so much. We're really glad you're here. But for those of our listeners who may be new to Legacy, I'm going to have you reintroduce yourselves. Tell us a little bit about your background, what you're currently working on. Emily, ladies first.
Well, thank you. So I work with the Church Historic Sites Program, and my specialty is in church architecture. So on the Beehive House, Chad and I worked really closely together on understanding the history of the home and the people who lived there. So I spent most of my time on this project, crawling through the basement, up in the attic, looking at how the house has changed over the years, and then looking at furniture and room use. And then Chad was brought in and did a lot of the other understanding the family issues. So my expertise is really in architecture and buildings and how we've used our sacred buildings for the last 150 years.
Excellent. Chad?
Well, Emily, I think, has given a lot of my background as well.
Sorry, Chad.
That's great. I, too, work in historic sites. My first project when I was brought over into historic sites was to work with the Beehive House to do a lot of the historical research on Brigham Young, the home, and other aspects of that, what I think is a magnificent complex, the Beehive House complex.
And it's so accessible to an historian who lives in downtown Salt Lake City or works there. So
not only accessible to the historian, accessible to all.
Right.
All people.
Now, before we get into some more of the specifics of the Beehive House, perhaps we can start with an overview of the Brigham Young property in downtown Salt Lake City. What kind of structures or types of labor was being performed at the time on that property?
Great question, because the Brigham Young property, we now look at the Beehive House and the Lion House and view that largely as the Brigham Young property.
Right, as a quarter block or so.
A quarter block or so, but it took in several blocks.
Yeah, I think of this as more of an estate than a property.
Wow.
He had more than two houses. He had multiple homes. He had his own set of barns and a carriage house and stables and his own blacksmith shop and school and a baptismal font / swimming pool. I mean, his estate went on and on, and it went up into City Creek Canyon a little bit, and almost all of church headquarters would have been originally part of Brigham Young's property. It's a busy, bustling place with lots of people working, managing the farm, managing the house, and then all of the visitors coming in wanting to meet with Brigham Young and church leaders. It all happened in these couple little blocks.
Yeah, he normally had the block where the church administration building, the church office building, the block to the east of that where the Brigham Young Historical Park is located. And the block we're describing in a lot of ways is the block that he was given initially when he arrived in Salt Lake. Over time, that shrunk as he gave portions of that property either strictly to church use or to other individuals.
So what was the impetus for the building of the Beehive House?
Brigham Young needed a governor's mansion. Yeah. He was governor, Indian agent, and church president. He needed an official residence as a place to live and a place to host official guests as they came into the valley. So construction started in about 1852, and was finished about 1854 as a grand, majestic building, because this was the official showpiece of the church in Salt Lake.
It wasn't the first home that Brigham Young had built in the valley. There were some homes, log cabin row, situated just east of where the church office building is. They built what was known as the White House, but they needed a home that was better suited for his role, his many roles, as well as a home to that would support his growing family. So the determination was made to build the Beehive House. And as you look at the Beehive House today, and Emily will probably get more of this, the house that Brigham Young built is not exactly the Beehive House as we see it today. While the first part of it that's facing South South Temple is the same, the back portion was basically a one and a half. Now it's a three-story building, but then it was one and a half. And a lot of people think, well, this is a large building, but for a governor's mansion, if you compare it to other governor's mansions, such as the governor's mansion today, it is really quite a relatively small building.
The original home was two stories on the part that faced South Temple, and it's an adobe building on a stone foundation. And on the main floor, you had a large parlor, a little teeny tiny, could have been a bedroom, could have been a little, kind of almost a closet size. And on the other side of the hall would have been a bedroom and then a couple of closets on the main floor. And then that's it. And then the upper floor would have had a large greeting hall and two bedrooms. And then the back half of the home, which was eventually torn down, had a kitchen, a dining room for all of the hired hands that lived on the property, and then a sleeping loft above for anyone who needed a place to sleep. So you had maybe 10 people living in this home, which really wouldn't have been a big house when you start actually looking at the numbers. And what's interesting about it is that when you step up to the Beehive House, you actually see four buildings. And we focus on the Beehive House, but the Beehive House, the Lion House, and then those two little offices in the middle tell this really amazing story about what Brigham Young's roles were in the church and in the world, and then how Salt Lake City evolved and changed over the years. Because all four of those buildings changed as function changed, as Mormonism changed. And so when you look at the Lion House compared to the Beehive House, they're built within a two-year period but had very different functions and have now split off and are doing two very different things, all adobe buildings with stone foundations.
You know, at the time, the Beehive House was considered more a public, the governor's mansion, while the Lion House throughout Brigham Young's time was more of a family. It wasn't as accessible to the public. Brigham Young used to greet visitors in the Beehive House. Very seldom would they take individuals over to the Lion House to meet the family. That was kind of an area that was reserved for the family as well as for hired hands or those who needed a place to stay lived in the Lion House.
Let's take a step back and talk a little bit about the construction. Who was architect? Probably someone people recognize.
Architect of the Beehive House was Truman O. Angel, who also designed the Salt Lake Temple, the St. George Temple, and was involved in the Kirtland Temple. He was a very big deal in church architecture. And Brigham Young and Truman O. Angel were actually brother-in-laws and worked really closely together in a lot of buildings. And so I think it's interesting as you go through the building to wonder where Truman's designs ended and Brigham's designs began.
Because he was a carpenter.
Brigham Young's a carpenter, and he couldn't leave the building alone. If you actually look at the Lion House, on the dormer windows, there's a little Y in all those window frames, which is not needed structurally, but Brigham Young had put in because he's a carpenter and a window maker, and he just can't leave those guys alone to build on their own. So Truman O. Angel designed the building. And they hired local people coming into Salt Lake who needed work. And the construction process actually went pretty quickly. They started about 1852. Mary Ann was moving in about 1854.
And that's Mary Ann Angel, Truman's
sister.
Brigham Young's wife.
So the family moves in 1854. And then in the 1860s, they add on a little bit to the house. And then in the 1880s, they add on a little bit more. And then in about 1900, they add on a little bit more. In 1930, they add on a little bit more, and so until you get the house that you see today. So, and actually, Truman O. Angel designed all four of those buildings, those offices, and also the Lion House.
So, the beehive symbol is known in the Mormon Church because of the Deseret bee in the Book of Mormon. Where is that? The reason the Beehive House is called what it is?
I mean, that is one. I mean, this was the state of Deseret. You know, originally, that was what they petitioned to become. So, yes, and eventually Congress created the state of Utah in its place rather than the state of Deseret. And so the Beehive House is symbolic of the that this was the governor's mansion of this state of Deseret. One of the things that I think, as I've studied Brigham, I appreciate about the Beehive is that we, on the state flag of Utah, they have the Beehive and underneath this industry. And I think that is true. Brigham Young desired everyone to be actively involved. You know, Emily talked about giving individuals work when they didn't have work. But I think as much as industry, the Beehive represented – if you look in a beehive, every single bee has a different function within the hive. They're all working together for the good of the Beehive. And I think that was one of the ideas that Brigham Young was trying to put forth. And I think in the community, and I think the Beehive House kind of represents that ideal as well.
Plus, the Beehive House has a beehive on top of the building. On the roof, there's a cupola which had four doors leading into it. And then on top of that is an actual beehive. It was wood originally, and it's been had to be replaced a couple times because the weathering kind of gets to it. And Brigham's daughter, Clarissa, remembers that it was painted bright yellow originally, and it's a little more white now. But that physically there was a beehive on top of this house, on top of a governor's mansion. I think it's a really interesting thing talking about that symbolic use of the beehive. Then instead of an eagle or some other national symbol, they chose the great symbol of Mormonism for the top of his house.
So tell me about the style of it, the construction of the building. Something that, you know, I would understand perhaps.
So as you look at the Beehive House and the Lion House, architecture tells you something about the function of a building. So the Beehive House was built in the Greek Revival style, which is kind of the style of democracy, the style of public buildings, a lot of banks and libraries and the state capitol. And a lot of those buildings are built in kind of a similar style, evoking the idea of democracy and equality and government and an open interchange between people. And then the Lion House is built in more of a Gothic Revival style. And Gothic Revival is supposed to remind you of the great medieval churches. And that is supposed to tell you that the family that lives in this home is a religious family. And this is a family that prays together and reads the scriptures together. And so as you walked up to these two buildings, you could see that one of these is a family home and one of these is a public home, without even knowing which one is, without knowing anything about the family or how they were constructed or anything, you could tell which building you needed to go into for a certain purpose.
So drilling down to a specific part of this building, you said it was done with adobe brick. Is that true?
Yes. These buildings are adobe. Most people wouldn't believe that looking at them now. And adobe is basically you take mud and put it out in the yard and dry it in the shape of bricks and then put the bricks up. And then you stucco over it because the stucco helps keep the moisture out. And both the Beehive House and Lion House have most of their adobes are still in those walls, still handcrafted pioneer adobe. And you go into the Beehive House, they have a little cutout on the second floor near the front door, and you can see a little section of that adobe and what those bricks look like.
Excellent.
And it was not only the these houses were built out of adobe, but most of the early pioneer houses were built out of adobe. It was easy to obtain. There was also a concern on the part of Brigham Young that if they, and they looked nicer than, say, a log cabin. They were easy to put up. They were cheaper to heat and cool than some of the other building material. But Brigham was always kind of a practical man. And on one occasion, he stressed this need for fear that if they kept building out of wood, they may use the limited resources that were in the mountains around here. So there are a lot of reasons why the Saints build out of adobe.
And this actually makes this building really significant for Utah because adobe doesn't hold up well. You can imagine dried mud after 150 years often starts falling apart. So not only is the Beehive House a really significant building for the church, it is also one of the earliest adobe buildings still standing in the state of Utah, which makes it one of the earliest adobe buildings in this part of the country. And that significance also, to understand how people built buildings in the 1850s, is something we don't often think about.
And when we were underneath the Beehive House going around, they still have some of the old adobe bricks that are accessible there, and they are pretty strong.
This is Legacy on the Mormon Channel. We're talking today with Emily Ett and Chad Orton about the Beehive House found in downtown Salt Lake City, Utah, longtime residents of Church President Brigham Young. I'm Nathan Wright. So let's talk about perhaps day-to-day life of the Young family in the Beehive House.
One of the things that was somewhat of a challenge is that in doing this is that Brigham Young was rather private with regards to his family. So we do know, have some idea what life was like, there's a lot more that I think we all wish we knew about this aspect of it. One of the things that I love about the Lion House, the Beehive House, and Emily mentioned it, the religious devotion of the family. The family every day, Brigham Young tried to hold a devotional with his family every night at 6:30. The ideal, I mean, it's an early predecessor of our family home evening. The ideal was not always realized. One of my favorite letters Brigham Young wrote was to his family, reminding them the importance of giving due devotion to this nightly prayer, nightly opportunity to meet as a family, to discuss concerns, to enjoy each other's companies, to be taught the gospel. We do know that there were a number of people within who lived within the complex, and they would eat together, common meals, in a dining room that is now down on the main floor. Is it the basement? Depends which side you enter.
Of the Lion House.
Of the Lion House, where they would get together, and 30, 40, 50 people would not be uncommon to be there for the meals each day. Not all of those were, most of those were part of Brigham Young's family, but they also had others that would come in and eat. Again, it goes back to this idea of beehive. Everyone seemed to have a particular assignment that they were responsible for.
Yeah. Each wife was given responsibility that she was good at. So one of Brigham Young's wives that the family called Aunt Twist was apparently a master cook and managed the kitchen. So her job for the family was to make sure that everybody was fed every day at the Lion House. And then another wife was a very good hostess, and so she was put in charge of the Beehive House to make sure that that home was being managed appropriately. And another wife was an excellent school teacher, so she was made the school teacher for all the children. And they would just share duties and pass things around and really work well together. And what's really interesting is this family didn't really talk much about how all those inner workings of who did what and how it all happened, but it worked. And another interesting thing is that Brigham really encouraged education for his children. So like I said earlier, he had a schoolhouse built on his property. So all of his children attended school every day. And then often they were put out and helped work on the farms that Brigham Young owned. One of his sons wanted to drop out of school, and so his father put him in charge of driving the mule on the farm. And then that lasted about 2 weeks, and he was back at school because he realized he didn't want to be a mule driver the rest of his life.
You mentioned that there were lots of visitors who came through the Beehive House. Do we know who some of these visitors may have been?
Well, there were folks that came a lot. Heber J. Grant apparently was a fairly common visitor to the Beehive and Lion Houses as a young man. He remembers as a kid attending family prayer with the family. And so there were neighborhood kids passing through all the time. Every church leader and almost every church member probably would have been in this home at some point. If they came to Salt Lake, had official church business, they would have ended up at this home. And then there's more famous visitors. Mark Twain came to the Beehive House. Ralph Waldo Emerson, General Sherman. I'm trying to think of all these people that came through. We have a list somewhere. Tom Thumb came through the Beehive House and had dinner with the family. I mean, anybody who was anybody. And a lot of people who weren't anybody. Over a space of a decade, he had thousands of people come into the helm.
Yeah, we have one of his register books, I'm trying to think what the official term, where people would sign. And over the course of 1 year, there were over 3,000 individuals who signed, having come to visit him. These weren't the traditional, you know, the Heber J. Grant showing up. These were largely out-of-town visitors. People would come and want to see Brigham Young. And for when he was able, he would take opportunity to meet with these individuals. Very time-consuming. But yet, he took the opportunity to do it. And Emily said, you know, most people would be there. The reception hall on the second floor, there were dances, dinners, other events that were given there in that home. And a lot of the younger people in the valley would remember going to some of these events and enjoying being there with the prophet.
You also remember that Brigham had a very large family and a lot of teenagers. We talk sometimes about the Big Ten. He had 10 teenage girls all about the same age. So you can imagine the party scene that would have been going on at this home most of the time, with all of these sons and daughters and all of their friends coming into the house and wanting to just visit in the home. And then all of the out-of-town visitors curious about Mormons wanting to come to the home. And then all the official church guests. This was a busy, busy place every single day of the year.
There were those who would remember there was a choir that used to come in from out of town for every general conference, and they would talk about every single time they came in, they would stay in the Beehive House. You know, one of the stories, and as Emily was talking about the Big Ten, one of my favorite stories that takes place with Brigham Young regards his daughters at dating age. They would all get together, and this was the parlor in the Lion House, but they were very much connected, these two buildings. There was a hallway that ran between them. They were dating, and they decided to make the room a little more to their liking, and so they took books and put it around the lamp so that it was a little darker. And Brigham Young opens the door, looks in on his daughters and the boys, and doesn't say a word. But he walks over, moves all the books from around the lamp, and then he says to his daughters, "My daughters will now go upstairs, and I'll say goodbye to their gentleman callers."
The end.
Yeah. I thought that would be very intimidating to go to Brigham Young's home.
But it's how he managed that big house. Usually very calmly, very quietly, because he had a lot of people to take care of, and he was very concerned about his family and keeping them happy and fed and thinking about life. And he did everything he could to help that family thrive. I mean, to the point of building the Lion House, which is basically a dormitory. That's a big house, even by modern standards, just so his family could all live together and interact well.
And there were a lot of people living there. One of the visitors, and I don't know if he stopped to count, said, I met all 75 residents of the Lion House. It's a big house, but when you start putting 75 people in there,
wow,
it gets small real quick. Brigham is an amazing individual in how he tried to teach and raise his family. He spent a good deal of time trying to teach them what they should do, what their responsibilities were, what their duties were. The kids recall him very seldom raising his voice, very seldom, if ever, corporal punishment, that he preferred to teach and to train rather than discipline or raise them in other manners.
We talk about other church sites of some of the things that occurred in the church while we were there. Let's say, you know, the Liberty Jail, the certain sections of the DNC. And what were some of the things that occurred inside the Beehive House that we can relate to church history?
You know, we frequently focus the Beehive House just with Brigham Young. But for more than 50 years, this was a home of prophets. Brigham Young lived there for the first 20 years, but there was also where John Taylor, not John Taylor.
Lorenzo Snow.
No, I'm sorry, I've skipped
Joseph,
one.
Yeah, Lorenzo Snow
and Joseph S. Smith also made this their home. For more than 50 years, this was a place where the church was run, where it was governed. And there are a lot of things that are taking place. I mean, one of the first things that come to my mind, it was within these walls that they organized the rescue of the handcart pioneers. They oversaw the implementation, the reorganization of the Relief Society, the auxiliaries, the young men, young women's organization, the primary were discussed and implemented within these walls.
Maybe even some battle plans during the
Utah
War.
Battle plans
you
during
think?
The Utah War, absolutely.
Yeah.
This is where they met and considered how they were going to deal with that.
When the Mountain Meadows Massacre happened and that runner came to Salt Lake to consult with Brigham Young, he would have come into the Beehive House in Brigham Young's office for those discussions. And then to take it even further, the plans to dedicate the Salt Lake Temple would have been large part planned in this office complex. Lorenzo Snow and Joseph F. Smith becoming presidents of the church, which then also means the introduction of Family Home Evening officially for the church. And then Section 138 was received in the Beehive House in one of the upstairs bedrooms. In the last few months of Joseph F. Smith's life, as he's an invalid and is being kept to his room, he's pondering the scriptures, and Section 138 is received. And that room is still there, furnished a little bit differently right now, but you can still go up and have a moment and think about that revelation and its impact on the church.
Yeah, I mean, it's great because he identifies it. Last night, as I was pondering the scriptures in my room, and you can go there and have that somewhat the same experience.
So the Beehive House was basically a precursor to what we have as which is the administration building. I didn't say that very well.
Yes. The Beehive House was used, I should say really the office next door to the Beehive House was church headquarters from 1852 to 1918 when the church administration building was built. And then the church administration building, that's where all church employees really were headquartered until the church office building was built in the 1970s. So these two tiny offices, if you imagine if you walk in there trying to fit all church employees in those two little rooms would be impossible today. But from those little spaces, they managed the growth of the church. What is that, 70 years?
And if you go into we call it the president's office now, I mean, there are great pictures of later church presidents meeting within that office, not only Brigham Young. We haven't talked a lot about the offices, but originally the one closest to the which now the president's office was the governor's office. And to keep things separate, they also had the church president's office, which is now the office where you enter and begin your tour of the Beehive House.
Yeah, and so you have the church office building and then then the church president's office all connected by a hallway. And that little hallway, when you first walk up to the Beehive House to start your tour and go into that door, that was a telegraph office that Brigham Young had built inside his office complex so he could receive the news of the day as it's happening. So you can imagine a telegraph operator was sitting in that room running messages back and forth between Brigham Young's office and the church office, and there would have been clerks in that church office, the one on the west side, taking notes, transcribing letters, managing all the day-to-day affairs of the church. And in the early days, that office was also used as the church's tithing office until it was moved kind of to where the Joseph Smith Memorial Building is now. And then in Brigham Young's office, you'd have these 1,000 visitors coming in. The first presidency in the Quorum of the Twelve would have been meeting in that room, discussing what the church needs to be doing, planning construction of the St. George Temple and the Salt Lake Temple. And really, this would have been a very exciting place to be visiting every day.
The reorganization, I forgot the earlier reorganization of the priesthood, so we have the organization of the church as we know it now, was done in this office.
And another interesting thing is that the layout of those offices have actually changed. And if you go, this is something that most people will never get to do, which was really kind of fun, was to crawl underneath these offices. And they're these tight crawl spaces, maybe 2.5 feet deep, full of all of the plumbing and electrical equipment, and to crawl through and see the original foundations for these buildings. And you could see where there used to be a fireplace that's been removed and a wall has been moved. So we have a really good idea now of what this these buildings looked like in 1854 and then in 1860 when they were remodeled. So the buildings really do tell a story if you stop and look at them really closely.
And it's been about a year, 2 years ago, we as part of the work in historic sites, we've tried to make the Beehive House look a little more like it was when as an office when Brigham Young was there. Many people may have gone years ago and they remember that there were benches in what is now considered the president's office. Those have been removed. Desks have been brought in to make it look a little more like you were going back and visiting the office. Not necessarily Brigham Young's, not just Brigham Young's time, but for later presidents as well.
And that's going to continue to change. We have plans to put in one of those registers from Brigham Young's time so people can flip the pages and see who visited and what countries they're visiting from and what they did for a living, and bring in some additional furniture and additional artwork to really get a sense of that early period for the church. Yeah, we've hung all of the portraits of the Quorum of the Twelve on the walls, and if anybody can tell me who they are in order, they'll win a prize of some kind. So far, only a couple of people have been able to do it, to name all of the apostles in 1854. We can name them today, but most of us probably couldn't name them then.
That's true.
On your next tour, see if you can do it.
So as Emily said, we've hung some items. We're hoping to get some other. People would comment on these items and talk about the things on the wall with Brigham. And I mean, there's some of those stories are absolutely great. One of the ones that I think says a lot about Brigham Young is he had a painting on his wall, a lithograph of a painting of Albert Bierstadt's Sunlight and Shadows. And Bierstadt's a famous painting, and somebody commented on it. And Brigham Young says, well, a lot of people think this is a great painting, but I don't see it. But then what I love is he said, well, the problem may be is I have it hanging on the wrong place in the wall. Maybe I need to hang it somewhere else so I can see it in a different light.
1850s feng shui.
Yeah. You know, but the fact that he's hanging on this wall a painting that he doesn't like that somebody's given to him, I think is really quite, says a lot about him.
Hmm. We're visiting today with Chad Orton and Emily Utt of the Church History Department, and the topic of discussion is the Beehive House in Salt Lake City. And, of course, you can't talk about the Beehive House without the Lion House, which we've been including quite a bit. Tell me about the evolution of the Beehive House. It eventually was not the church administration building anymore and fell into different hands. How did it all fall out?
Well, just before Brigham died, he actually deeded the Beehive House to his wife, Lucy Decker, which then took the home out of church hands. So she was free to do with it whatever she wanted. And so in the 1880s, she sold it to one of Brigham's sons, and Joseph... She sold it to John W. Young, who was an apostle and a very influential church leader. And John W. started a expansion campaign of the home. He tore down the back half of the house. He built a three-story addition on the north side of the home and was in the middle of the renovations of the house when he had a financial downturn and lost the home to the bank, which is a bit of a problem for the church. And then another man bought it named John Beck, who was a railroad man, who shortly after he bought the home and continued the renovations, also had a financial downturn and lost the house in a sheriff sale because he hadn't paid his taxes that year. And so the church stepped in at that point, and that's when the church bought the home, and Lorenzo Snow moved in and finished the renovations and made it a proper church president's home. And then Joseph F. Smith moved in at Lorenzo Snow's death. And after Joseph F. Smith died, Heber J. Grant didn't want to live in the home. He was happy where he was and decided that he didn't want to move back downtown and live in the Beehive House. And so in about 1920, the church had a very large, beautiful, empty building, which then gave an opportunity for the young women to step in. As Salt Lake was beginning to grow after World War I, there were all these people coming in who needed a place to live, needed kind of a sheltering hand to help them out as they navigated life in the big city for the first time. And so the young women turned the building into a dorm, and for all these young girls coming to Salt Lake from rural communities. And the house was adorned clear up until the 1950s.
1959, as I recall.
Yeah. Yes. And so I still meet women who lived in the Beehive House. They would come into Salt Lake. They'd maybe live there a couple of weeks. They'd live there a couple of months. Sometimes they'd come there for a week, and then they'd get married in the temple and go back to their small town. And so it was this very interesting place. And the Lion House became a social center. So the girls would live in the Beehive House and then go to the Lion House, and they'd have their meals there. They could join the writing club or the book club or the dance club, or write letters home to their parents and be kind of a social center, and then live in the Beehive House. And then in 1959, as the church was looking at rethinking Temple Square and church headquarters, there was an idea that maybe the Beehive House is not needed anymore. And so a plan was put forward to tear it down and build a parking garage. And you can imagine the cry that went out from church members about that. And the church quickly changed their mind and instead of tearing down the Beehive House, restored the Beehive House into what people see today as a museum and as a memory to Brigham Young and those early church leaders.
And so what am I going to find if I walk through the front door today? I'm a visitor, first time to Salt Lake City. Here I go.
What I hope people get the message from the Beehive House, the idea that you learn about early Utah and how it was directed as the community by a prophetic leader who wore multiple hats. So prophetic leadership, the sense of community that in Utah history, family devotion. These are messages that I'm hoping people will come away with and appreciate from their time in the Beehive House.
And it's not only prophetic leadership at Brigham Young, it's prophetic leadership of multiple prophets, and it's community from 1852 clear up to 1959, because this was a community center. And this was the showpiece of Salt Lake, that these ideas and trends are these things that we value today in the church are not just new things, that Brigham Young was advocating them and Joseph F. Smith advocated them, and that there is a continuity between the way that the church operates now and the church operated then. And you can step back a little bit and you can get a sense of a pioneer home and what it feels like to be in an adobe house and looking at pioneer furniture.
And find out these people who were dealing with the same challenges and struggles then as we do now, and learn from how they dealt with these.
Is there any one room or historic piece that really stands out in your mind?
One of the things I love about the home is you get a chance to see some, not just one room, but the early craftsmanship and the pride that these saints took in building this home. You know, throughout the home, it's made of pine, but they have painted the wood so it looked like bird's eye marble. Looks like oak. The skills of the pioneers are still on display there. And that's one of the reasons I really do like the offices for that aspect. You get a chance to see things up close and understand what was happening there as far as the history of the church. Oftentimes we overlook the offices and want to get right into the Beehive House, but those are very, I think, important in displaying these aspects of this marvelous structure.
There's a couple of pieces of furniture I really like in the home. One is actually in the offices, there's these desks on either side of the walls, and those desks are original to that room. And they were built by a man named William Bell, who was the head carpenter for the church in the 1850s and 60s and did really beautiful work. So you go into those offices, I see an original artifact like that, and my imagination goes wild. I can see clerks sitting there, and I can see them opening and closing and working those desks and then running up the stairs to the storage areas. And then there's a couch on the second floor in the sitting room, and it looks like this really beautiful rosewood couch. It has a red velvet kind of cushion on it, and that's actually pine. It was also made early on in Utah. It's a very beautiful piece of furniture, and that was the couch in the Lion House parlor that we moved into the Beehive House. It's a little bit safer for it. So as you go through the home, you're going to see original pioneer furniture kind of intermixed in some of the rooms. And then you're going to see some really nice furniture and furnishing styles from the later periods of the home. So you'll, as you walk through the house, you see kind of these layers of history on top of it. You might have to look a little bit closely, but they're all there on top of each other.
And part of the Beehive House is like there's a room, in a school room. You know, that was, we're trying to tell the story of Brigham Young. Of course, he had a separate schoolhouse. They also taught classes in the Lion House, but that room is there to remind of the importance of education. I love the story that is told in the Beehive House.
Another thing you can actually do is as you go to lunch in the Lion House, you can sit in Brigham Young's dining room and eat your lunch where he would have had his dinner every day. And that's kind of a fun thing. You can have your lunch in his kitchen and try to imagine those spaces a little bit. So Lion House and Beehive House, I think, both work together well to explain and show how people lived. And you can sit and stand in the places where these people sat and stood. And you don't really get to do that much in Utah and in the country.
And if you go up one floor, there's still the parlor. You know, there are things that you can look at that are, I mean, they've been changed somewhat, but you get the idea, reminded of this early pioneer.
Any other insights from having been able to crawl around the attic and the basement and where nobody else can go, Emily?
The other thing that we learned about Brigham Young and his carpenters and masons, all the people that worked on this building, is that Brigham built this building stronger than he needed to. The foundations on this thing are big and thick. You know, they're 3 or 4 feet across foundation stones, which you don't need for an adobe building. 2 feet probably would have done it. And I think that says something interesting about Brigham Young and his family, that they built stronger than they needed to because they wanted these buildings to last, just as they wanted this idea of Mormonism to last. And most people will never see those foundations, so trust me, they're big.
Who would have guessed so much could happen within the walls of an adobe brick building? Let's talk about just briefly the hours of the Beehive House.
The house is open almost every day of the year, usually about 9:30 or 10 o'clock in the morning until dark, so 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And the tours are free. Sister missionaries are always in the home ready to take you around. The tour takes about 30 minutes, and they can show you everything that we've discussed today are things that the sisters are comfortable with and can talk about.
Do they still give you a piece of whorehound candy?
They actually don't. One of the things that discovered over the years is that frequently the whorehound candy was deposited in the dirt outside the door because that's, as you've had it before.
I grew up on it, so I was probably one of the few that
actually liked it. Instead, now they give you lemon drops.
And actually, they've stopped that, too.
Oh, they used to give you lemon drops.
Oh, that's it.
Another thing that has happened is that BF House had this really long tradition of handing out candy at the end, but you don't really like food in historic buildings.
Right.
Because when you have food, you get bugs. And so we've kind of put a stop to the candy, even though we love it, because some of the artifacts in that building are so precious that we don't want to risk damage from whorehounds or lemon drops.
Makes perfect sense. Yeah. Thank you again for joining us today. You're listening to Legacy on the Mormon Channel, a media outlet of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Mm-hmm.